CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. I certainly enjoyed my time at Cold Fusion Conference a lot. I've gotten a chance to talk to several of you, and I really appreciate it. And I know this session is right before lunch, and I'm the only thing keeping between you and lunch. And so, just to let you know, I'm not going to take the full 3 hours that they've allocated. So I will make sure you get to lunch on time. But seriously, as I've talked to many of you, one of the things I've heard a lot about is kind of what's next on the web and where the web's going. It's been very interesting for me to hear your feedback on the kinds of apps that you're building. So I wanted to kind of repeat back some of that and give you some thoughts for where Microsoft thinks the web's going. So one thing I hear a lot when I talk to people is about this whole web 2.0 thing. What's next with the web? What's the next version of the web? And then Ajax kind of comes up a lot. So kind of fundamentally, what is Ajax? What's this web 2.0 thing about? Well, there's kind of two big pieces of technology. There's XML HTTP, which Microsoft actually introduced to the world back in the late 90s to support our Outlook Web Access interface. And it's a pretty low-level piece of technology that's about sending data back up to the server in a mechanism other than postback. And then there's JavaScript, which our friends over in Netscape introduced to the world, and then Microsoft later kind of embraced. And that's about how you can actually program the web. And these two technologies over the last, say, 18 months or so have become really mainstream. They've gotten to the point of ubiquity where all the modern browsers basically support these in very similar kind of ways. And that opens the door for a broad new set of applications. But really, these technologies are fundamentally not what Web 2.0 is about. They're important, they're building blocks, but really, fundamentally, they're plumbing. They're the plumbing of what Web 2.0 is about. So what's the essence? What's the thing that's really really about when you think about Web 2.0? So I think it's user experience. My opinion is what separates the next generation of web apps from the generation that came before is this real focus on what the user experience is going to be, how users interact with the app. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time today talking about that and kind of breaking down what great user experience on the web is about. So when I think about that, there are four concepts we should talk about. The first concept is function. What's the function of the site? So I've been camping before, and I've taken a can of SpaghettiOs and tried to open that with a knife, and I'm here to tell you, you can do that. You can open a can of SpaghettiOs with a knife, but it's not the safest thing to do, and it's actually quite messy to do that, it's certainly not very secure. But you can, on the other hand, you could take something that was designed to open a can with, like a can opener, and with a can opener, it's secure, safe, and clean to open a can with a can opener. So you can say that your designs, as you think about whether your designs have good function, if they have great user experience, your designs have great user experience when, like the can opener, they work great. So the first principle of building sites with great user experiences is that they work great. All the other stuff we talk about in terms of the aesthetics and other aspects of great user experience don't matter if fundamentally the function of the site doesn't work properly. So you first have to make sure that the app you're building works great. So the second principle to talk about is the aesthetics. That is, how the site looks or how your application behaves. So when I think about my dream stereo system, not only does it work great in terms of providing this surround sound, but the shape and the form, the layout of the speakers are pleasing. They're aesthetically pleasing to the eye. They enhance the experience with their visual appeal. And what we're seeing is with the next generation of web applications, that's important. The aesthetics is very important there. So you can say that your applications have great user experiences when they look great. Not only do they work great, but they actually look great as well. So this third principle to talk about is the interaction. So when I think about making espresso, this espresso machine, not only does it work great, it produces a functional cup of coffee, it also looks great, and then there's an extra, there's a plus in that it has a feature that's important to me personally. As my wife and I both enjoy a cup of coffee, it allows creating two cups of coffee at the same time, so one doesn't get cold while you're getting the other one. It has a feature that's important to me as a user. So you can say that your web applications have great user experiences when they work great, when they look great, and then with this example, when they relate to you, and they have some relation, some connection with the end user, some specific feature that works great for that end user. So the fourth concept for great user experience is actually my favorite, and that's the end-to-end process. That's the end-to-end view of that. And to kind of help capture that or get that idea in your mind, I thought it was interesting maybe to think about taking a vacation. Maybe you're going to book a room at a hotel on a tropical island. But, you know, the vacation doesn't actually start when you get to the hotel, does it? The vacation actually starts way before that. It starts maybe over the kitchen table as you're having breakfast and you're planning the vacation. You're deciding where to go. You're looking at a bunch of options. You're deciding what kind of trip you want to have, discussing that with your spouse. And then maybe you actually arrive at the destination. Part of the process is how you arrive there. Maybe you fly in, or maybe you're lucky enough to figure out a way to actually cruise into this tropical island that you're going to stay at. And then maybe you take a walk on the beach and have a stroll there. And then you check into the hotel. You're greeted warmly by the staff. You're shown up to your room at the top of the hotel, which has a great view of almost the entire island. You take some pictures, and fundamentally, you're generating memories. You generate some memories from this trip. The whole process helps you generate those memories. And those memories create an emotional connection. So you can say that your applications have a great user experience when they connect emotionally with you, when your apps have that kind of emotional bond. So this is what we mean by great user experience. So you should think about whether your apps, your sites, or any product really has a great user experience when it works great, when it looks great, when it relates directly to you, and when you can connect emotionally with it. That's what we mean by great user experience. Now, I know some of you are saying, wait a second here. I thought I came to a Microsoft talk. And don't they do software? And weren't we talking about this whole Web 2.0 thing? Like, how does this connect? How does this relate? Well, I think if you look around the web today, there's bunches of applications, bunches of sites out there that apply exactly the principles that we've been talking about. And this is the trend as we move forward with the next generation of web applications. And as your users use these sites across the web, they're going to demand those same kind of user experience principles in your site. So that brings us to Microsoft Atlas. And Atlas is our framework for building these web-based applications with great user experience. So it's a JavaScript framework. It's a framework written entirely in client-side JavaScript that runs ubiquitously across all platforms, so there's nothing specific about it as far as to Windows only. It runs great on the Mac, runs great in Firefox, runs great everywhere. We've also tried to make this framework a very productive framework. We really focused on developer productivity. How long does it take you to get the common tasks done? And we've taken those plumbing aspects we talked about of Web 2.0 and baked them deep into the framework and abstracted that away so you don't have to worry about it. We've focused on this whole designer-developer workflow. Whether or not you contract out the actual design work or whether you have that in-house, it's very important as you build these kind of next-generation user experiences that you have a tight collaboration with the design and developers working together on the same set of assets. If the way you work with the designer today is they draw bitmaps and email them to you and you kind of try to make a web app that looks sort of like that bitmap, then there's lots of efficiency to be had in that system. So one of the principles that we have with Atlas is that you're able to kind of work very seamlessly together. And finally, we wanted to provide Atlas as a free, no-cost, free tool that supports it. So in the demo I'm going to do in a bit, I'm going to do it in Visual Studio Web Developer Express Edition. And Express is available absolutely free, download on the web. It's a full-featured, everything you need to go build one of these apps has a rich visual design experience, a JavaScript debugger. So there's basically everything you need to go build these apps is kind of baked right into that. So the next thing I want to talk about is a little bit about the architecture for Atlas. Like how did we build Atlas? How do we put these pieces together? So I think it starts with the easiest way to understand it is to start with a set of browser clients. So there's IE, Firefox, Safari, are kind of the big major browser clients. And then they use the set of Atlas client-side JavaScript libraries that we've created. And if you work from the bottom up, what these libraries are, there's the Atlas Runtime Library, and it provides essentially the BCL that JavaScript never had. So it uses the existing JavaScript extensibility mechanisms to provide Notion, to make JavaScript a component-oriented language, to make it, and that helps it be much easier to build applications in. So with the Atlas runtime, what we've done is add notions like properties and events. We've added notions of classes, of inheritance, of interfaces. So you have these, if you're kind of familiar with modern programming languages like Java or C Sharp or Visual Basic.net, then you'll be very comfortable in this environment. And then next up is the Atlas compat layer. And if you've tried to do some Ajax programming or some JavaScript programming today, you know it's sort of a pain to make sure your app works on both Firefox and IE and whatever the next browser is. So what we've done is we've encapsulated a lot of that common kind of browser detection logic and customized differences, little tweaks for each browser into that Atlas compat layer. And then there's the Atlas framework, and that's a framework that encapsulates the HTML framework, and it gives you kind of very easy access to that, so it's kind of a rich component-oriented model for building apps. Then we have some support for gadgets, so that's the MicrosoftLive.com, and then in Windows Vista, the sidebar. So it's very easy to build these gadgets that run in those locations with Microsoft Atlas. And then, of course, in true kind of Ajax fashion, we have to have a kind of a Glitz library that gives you kind of the advanced kind of effects in terms of how transitions happen and things like that. And the beautiful thing about this is it's a layered framework. So if all you're using is the base runtime, that's all you have to download. And if you're using kind of some of the higher level stuff, then you can download that as well. So it's very much a pay-for-play system. So that's what happens on the client side that runs in browser in Firefox or IE or whatever. And then on the server side, I actually work on the ASP.NET team, so we've obviously done a lot of work in ASP.NET to take advantage of that library that's there, and I'll show you a little bit of that later. But just to give you a flavor for it, a couple of things we've done. At the bottom there, we've created a set of new ASP.NET server-side controls. So we have a set of developers that just love building server-side apps, and they don't want to necessarily mess with the JavaScript at all. So we've built a set of server-side controls that leverage that Atlas client-side library transparently for you. And then next up, ASP.NET offers kind of advanced application-level services like membership, role management, profiles, login. And so we've taken those services and we've exposed them to the JavaScript clients so that they can get first-class access to them. And then we've done a JSON bridge support. And if you're familiar with the Ajax world, it's been about a year or so, JSON's really taken off as being the way to communicate to JavaScript apps running in the browser. It's not a Microsoft technology at all. It's kind of one that's kind of grown up in the Ajax community. and it really fit exactly our need. And what it is, instead of sending XML down to the client as we would with traditional clients and web services, we send down this JavaScript object notation. It's kind of a stylized JavaScript format, and when we send that down to the client, and then we simply eval it on the client, so there's no parsing going on the client whatsoever. And so that gives a very rich kind of access to a wide variety of web services. So that's what we've done with IIS and ASP.NET, but we've also shown, because this Atlas client-side library is freely available, it works on all those clients, it works with any web server environment. So we've shown it in the past working with Apache and PHP, and then later today, I'm going to show it working with ColdFusion. It was kind of fun to get that working. So any of the client-side functionality that we're talking about, you can access directly from ColdFusion today. Okay, so without any further ado, let's get into a demo. So the demo I'm going to do is this Dice R Us app that I created. So it's an e-commerce application for selling dice. So if you'd like to get into my venture capital fund for this project, you can. I'm sure how popular selling dice on the web will be, but if it is popular, this is the site to do it. So this is Visual Studio. And again, everything I'm going to show you today works with the Express Edition that's available free to download, and I'll give you links to that later. But this is the site that we start out with here. And you can see it kind of violates my first principle, right? It's sort of a boring site. There's no kind of aesthetics to this site whatsoever. So what I did is I worked with a designer who used Microsoft Expression suite of tools to create some CSS. It's standard CSS stuff that's been around for a while and works in a wide variety of browsers to kind of spice up the site. So I wrote the site and then I said, hey, go spice it up. And she gave me this CSS. So I just dragged and dropped that on. And I'll refresh this in IE. And you see I have a much nicer kind of look to the site now. So let me just demo a little bit of the site here. So the way the site works, you search for the kind of dice that you want. Now it's going off and calling a SQL database that's kind of warming up in the background there. And then when it comes back, it's going to come back with a set of dice for us to choose from. So here's the set of dice it came back with. And then as I click through here, it gives me the details on each one of these. So I want you to notice a couple of things here as I play with this. So the first one is each time I click on this on the dice, what happens is the whole page refreshes. And it's a particularly annoying thing in this site because I'm using kind of this rich graphics, and it's really obvious that flicker is happening. And that kind of breaks my kind of user experience. The flow is broken for me when I do that. I'd like to get rid of that flicker. And then the second thing to notice is I'm clicking right now on that, and it takes a while between when I click and between I get any kind of user response, right? Actually, the truth is I put a delay in the database, but you could imagine having database logic that does take a while to go execute and round trip. And what sometimes happens is users will end up kind of hitting the button several times and sending several requests. And you want to avoid that. What you want is to have an immediate user response. So as soon as I click something, you want a client-side action to happen to indicate visually to the user that something happened, that, yes, I received that request. We're going off and processing that. So that's another problem with this site. And then the last problem with this site is that in this find box here, I have a database with all the dice name in it, but I ask the user to essentially guess the name of the dice. And that creates lots of opportunities for fat fingering, for getting the wrong thing. It would be really nice if I could do kind of a drop down here, sort of a Google suggest kind of thing. So what I'm going to show you here in the next couple of minutes is how to do all of this without writing any client-side Java code, with just the extensions that we've built to ASP.NET to let you do that. So let's take a look at the code. So we'll flip back over here to Visual Studio Express Edition. So the first problem I'm going to tackle is the kind of the biggest one, I think, and that's that whole page refresh issue. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come down here, and if you're not familiar with ASP.NET, I think you'll recognize it. It's mostly what I have in here is a set of divs and some HTML content. So I'm going to come here to this handy spot marked update panel. And update panel is it's a new ASP.NET server-side control that takes advantage of the Atlas scripting library that we have on the client. And I'll explain how this thing works. So basically what it is, the way update panel works is you take a region of the page and you delineate it. You say this set of HTML, whenever there's a postback, whenever the browser would do a full postback, instead of that, take it and push that over XML HTTP and send that back to the server. And then on the server side, we'll go through the full page lifecycle, regenerate the whole page, and then take just what was in this update panel and send it back via XML HTTP. And then on the browser, we get that packet and we update just that part of the DOM, just that part of the browser DOM that changed. We're kind of smart about what the diff is. And so what's in here is, what we're saying is, anytime any change within the update panel happens, or if there are changes outside of the update panel that reflect in content in the panel. So in my case, I have that search button that's beside the text box. Anytime that's pressed, I want to do an update of this region. And anytime the text is changed in that text box, anytime somebody types in the text box and hits return, when that event is fired, then I also want to kind of kick off the call. And so what I want to do, I want to wrap all of this in there. And then I'll come down here and put my close tag in. I'll close the content template first and then close the update panel. Now I'll just save that and I'll refresh this page. And now what should happen, as I click between these dice now, what should happen is you should see no full page flicker. You should see only the thing that has to change. So I click on the dragon dice and then this Star Trek dice. And see that changed, and there was no full page refresh at all. And this undo. So I'm still getting the pause, but I'm not getting any full page refresh. Okay, so that was the first thing. The second thing is that it's pretty annoying that when I click on these dice, it takes a while for the action to happen. I'd like to get some immediate user response. As soon as that happens, I'd like to do something. So by its very nature, you'd think you'd have to write some client-side JavaScript to do that. But again, we've encapsulated that in an ASP.NET server-side control. And let me come up here and find that. And we call this an update progress. And the way this works is it's an ASP.NET server-side control, and it notices whenever there's something going out over XML HTTP. And when some call goes out over XML HTTP, it shows this progress template, which is essentially a div. It shows this div, and then when the call comes back, it takes the div down. So as soon as you kind of initiate some action over there, it puts it up. And then when the call comes back, it takes it back down again. So there's some funky HTML in here, but really what's cool is I have this, it's essentially just an animated GIF that a designer created for me. So I have that animated GIF there. So I'm going to refresh this. And now what you should see is as I click between the dice, you should see some immediate user response. So you see this lady rolling the dice, and that tells you that there's this immediate response that tells me, okay, I clicked on that dice, and okay, I know you received that request, and it's just going to take a second. So that's immediate user response. So the last thing that we wanted to talk about was this find box is kind of a stupid find box right now. You have to just type in kind of from memory whatever you have. Wouldn't it be nice if it gave you a list of things that it could support there? So I think the easiest way to understand that is we have this autocomplete extender. So in addition to the server-side controls we created, we also created a set of extenders or additional functionality that you can add to the existing controls. So one of the pieces of existing functionality is this autocomplete extender. And the way it works is you give it a minimum prefix length. So for the case of the demo, I put it on 1, but you might put it on 3 or 4. That's the number of characters to type before the first time it tries to do the completion. So the number of characters. And then it gives you a web service to call. So in my case, the method is called getCompletionList. And then it gives you a service path. So this is the search autocomplete.asmx, and asmx is the ASP.NET kind of web services thing. And then it gives you the target control. Kind of what control do you want to apply this? You want to apply this to? So what might be interesting now is to actually take a look at this web service that we've created. So if you're, this is the ASP.NET standard kind of debugging support for web services. So I'm just going to say the prefix is 1 and the counts, The prefix is B and the counts 1. And that should, all we're doing in this implementation of this web service is going out to the database and returning, we did like simple ADO.NET query to return back the number of items that have that common prefix. And so you see that returns it back in essentially SOAP. If you're familiar with kind of web services, that's SOAP notation, which is good. That's good for a lot of usage. But when you're running in the browser, you probably don't want to parse a lot of XML, especially if you're going to do this as frequently as we need to do it for this autocomplete thing to work. So instead, what we've done is we've actually had some extensions to our web services to support this JSON notation. So if I call any ASMX web service on the server with /js, then what I get returned back is actually JavaScript. And so what this JavaScript in particular is JavaScript for the proxy to call this. But if you actually brought up a HTTP debugger, if you brought up Fiddler, and you looked over the wire, what you'd see is JSON going back and forth, and not XML. So let's look at how that actually behaves in our app. See if we got the functionality we wanted to get. So now when I type here, I type a B. What happens now is I get this nice autocomplete list. And I can just choose from one of those and do the search that way. So you can see, again, I got the autocomplete functionality, I got immediate user response, and I got rid of that kind of annoying page refresh with zero client-side JavaScript code. I get one applaud. Okay, that's good. Okay. So that is the server side. So let me tell you kind of back what we just saw. So with Atlas's server side model, what happens is on the server side you create your pages, you send the initial kind of look of it down, and then you do the presentation in the browser client. But the UI logic and behavior is still up on the server. So if you're a server guy and what you like to have is your server functionality, your kind of application logic running on the server, you can still do that with Atlas, and you get all the great support. You get all the great support that we just saw. There's also a client-side model, and I'll demo this in just a second. And what the way the client-side model works is you send down the initial rendering, but then the actual UI logic and UI behavior actually resides on the client. You're actually using kind of the full richness of the browser, and you're doing offloading a lot more processing onto the client tier. And there are some cases where that might be the best thing to do. And then all you're sending back up to the server is data. You're sending data back and forth. And in our case, it's most likely going to be in this JSON notation. So you send that back and forth. So this this Atlas client support, let me show you a little bit about how that works, how you might apply that. So I'm going to select this drag and dice. I'm going to say, okay, the drag and dice. I'm going to go spend $11 on a pair of dice. So before I spend $11 on a pair of dice, though, I want to configure it. If you've been to some of the e-commerce websites, custom configuration, kind of the long tail, where you can configure your dice exactly the way you want or your product exactly the way you personally want it, is becoming a much more common thing. And in order to do that, it takes a lot more richness than what you can do with traditional server-side logic. So I'll just demo this site a little bit. I think it's pretty cool. So what it does is it lets you kind of change the color of the dice. You can pick exactly what you want there. And I have this accordion control that we wrote for this demo. You see that nice kind of animation? That's the Atlas kind of Glitz library as I open and close these guys. So this accordion control is a reusable control that we have available for you to just download and go plug in. So you can change the dot color. So if you're kind of a black, you like your dice to have black color, you can do that. And let's see. You can also change the texture. Yeah, I got to get this right now. Yeah, so you can also change the texture. So you can get this kind of marble look, or you can get this wood look. So you can see the designers had a lot of fun creating the different kinds of dice that you might want to do. So let's switch back here to purple so you can see it better. And then the other thing we have is these different views of the dice. So you might want to look at the dice. You know, if I'm going to spend $11 on a pair of dice, I want to be sure I like those dice. So I want to be able to view those dice from a bunch of different angles. So the cool thing about this is you notice this is absolutely immediate. As soon as I click on a view, I get that. And that happens because I'm following a principle called predicting cache. So I'm predicting what the user's going to do, and I cache the images right in the local cache. So what happens is it's actually a fairly simplistic model. I actually had the designer create a set of image strips. So when she created these purple dice with black dots, she actually created it in one GIF with four different images on it, just spaced out appropriately in the single GIF. So as soon as you click on blue, if it's not already, I download it to the client. And then as you change views, all I'm doing is moving kind of a sliding window of what part to look at there. So I get that very immediate kind of response. And then after I got my dice all configured the way I want it, what I might want to do is kind of send it to a friend. So I might want to take the there's this permalink concept on the web you've probably seen before. Blogs kind of popularized it, but now it's almost everywhere, that you can navigate back to exactly this page with exactly this state on this page via a URL. And so what I'd like to do is be able to create a URL here that encapsulates all the state on this page. So I could send it to my buddy and say, hey, these are the dice I'm going to get. What do you think? So let's write the code to go do it. You can see it's actually not done yet. So let's see how hard that is. And I think it'll show you some of the power of the Atlas client-side libraries. So I'm going to switch over here. This is the configurator page. And I think the first thing to look at is this dice.js file. And this is client-side JavaScript that's written to the Atlas framework that I've written for this demo. So this is not this is kind of specific to this demo. And what I've done is I've created a namespace called dice, and I've created a class called config or configuration here. And what this configuration class does is it encapsulates the state on the page, what the dot color is, what the background color is, what the kind of dice it is. It encapsulates all that information. So I have it in an object format. And then I have a set of properties here to get the dice name, set the dice name. And you notice when I set this dice name, I raise a change notification because there's data binding to this class that I'll show you in just a minute. So you see I have properties for all these things. And now what I want to go do is to add a property for the for the permalink, and that permalink property has a couple of aspects to it. Let me just show you the code here. So what we do with the permalink, we get the base URL right, and then we just append to the query string, the dice name, the body color, the texture. We append all that stuff to it. So this is where we actually do the logic to kind of cons up that dice name. And we can see how easy that was. Because I'm dealing with an object-oriented model, I just have to call the property for the dice name and body color. And then I go through here, and I need to add the permalink. I need to add it to the to this class. So JavaScript doesn't have a first-class notion of classes, so we're putting that on top. So you have to specifically add these things. And then I have to raise this change notification on the permalink. So whenever the name, the body, and the texture, whenever any of those change, I need to make sure I change that permalink because stuff is data bound to that and it needs to get updated. And then, this is the same kind of thing. I need to raise the change notification. So now I have I have captured that information. I have it captured in the dice config file. Now what I need to do is come in here and actually attach it. So if we come up here, do this the old-fashioned way. Whoops, I guess I won't do it that way. Let me find the permalink tag in here. So here's the pop-up that you saw. That's an Atlas control too that lets you do the pop-up. And then here's the permalink, and you can see it's just a set of divs. So in particular, this is the permalink text we saw right there. And you notice the href there is just blank. I just blanked it out because it hasn't been filled in yet. So what I need to do is I need to take that permalink ID and I need to data bind it to that JavaScript class I just created. So what I don't want to do is have to write a bunch of if logic, if that changed, and do this. I just want to associate the two together and say, whenever one changed, do the other one. So let me show you how to do that and introduce another concept called XML script. So right here at the bottom of the page, what we have is we introduce a new script type. So you have script type JavaScript today. We add a script type XML script to give you a declarative way to data bind these things together. And you can see there's some data binding I already have in there to get some of the other stuff to work. And now I'm just going to drop this right in here. So you see I'm saying this is a hyperlink control. Its ID is permalink text. So that's the ID from the one we saw earlier up in the div tags there. And then here are the bindings. That text property that you saw, make that be the dice config class, that's the class we were just editing there in JavaScript. And then the data path is that permalink property. That's the name of the property we just created. And then do the same thing for the URL there. So this XML script, the Atlas framework actually parses this XML script on the client, turns it into JavaScript, and executes it. So we've done this thing for developer productivity to make it much easier for you to build these applications. So what we'll do now is kind of refresh that thing. Yes, so I need to make sure I save this. And then I need to make sure I restart IE. If you've done much JavaScript development with IE, you know it needs some encouragement sometimes. So. So I'll configure this dice. And now when I click on the permalink, you see I get that URL in there. And you see that it says the body color is blue, the dot color is black. If I close it and change it to, say, red, then I come in here and it says that the body color is red. So it gives me kind of that nice, I didn't have to write any specific code to do that, just because we've added this component-oriented nature to JavaScript. Now I think what might be interesting, you might be kind of tired of seeing IE at this point, and doesn't this stuff work in Firefox? So one cool thing, so I might email that to my buddy who runs in Firefox. I email him that URL, and you notice it comes up exactly the way I had it. So that's a really common way to share state on the web, is encoded in a URL. The other interesting thing, interesting way to share state in the web, is a lot of times you're at work and you're kind of browsing and then you accidentally close the browser or you go home and you'd like to come back to this page and have it be exactly the way you left off. I know I was filling out a web form, and I got like 90% of the way through, and it timed out, and so I had to refill out the whole form. It lost all my state. So managing state's a big problem on the web. So one of the things we've done to support that is, you know, here when I change the color, so notice I changed it in Firefox here. What happened actually is I got their event got fired, and I called our profile support, and I set a profile variable up on the server to be this new blue color. So now I've asynchronously let the server know I did a change. So that means when I come back here, and I have to remove the URL, but if I come back here and refresh it, it's blue. And if I change it, again, if I change this one to red, and I come back here and refresh it, it's red here, because it's getting the value from the server. So let me show you just real briefly about how that all works. So with ASP.NET, we have these web config files. So in web config, all I do is I set up this section here. Here are the properties. Here's the data I want to save. Let ASP.NET figure out how to save it, or you can configure it to go to the database that you want it to go to. I just say I want to save these values. Here's their default, and here's their types. And then in the Dice config thing, whenever there's a property change, I call this sys.profile.properties, and then I get strongly typed access to name, base color, dot color, and texture because I put it in that web config file. And anytime there's a property change, then I go ahead and change that stuff. So that's the power of Atlas that you can use on the client side. You notice you can do a very rich, kind of very powerful sort of application fully leveraging Atlas on the client. So let's go back to the slides here. Whoops. Yep, so the next thing, I know many of you are Cold Fusion developers, which is why you're here, so it might be interesting to see how does this Atlas stuff kind of work from Cold Fusion. So basically, the Atlas client-side libraries is the part that works from Cold Fusion. So I demoed two parts. I demoed the server side first, and then I demoed the client pieces. And it's the client pieces that's encompassed in the JavaScript, and that's what's available kind of very broadly. You don't have to be running on a Windows server. You don't have to be running ASP.NET. So you can use that anywhere. So when you install Atlas, those JavaScript libraries are just available in the program files directory. And then there's kind of other support we did with ASP.NET that's specific to ASP.NET. But certainly one of my goals for coming here was to see if there's kind of members of the Cold Fusion community that wanted to kind of help beef up Cold Fusion support for Atlas. I think that would be great. So let's switch over and do a demo of that. Okay, so what you're looking at here is the task list application. And you see, I don't know if you can see, it's kind of small, but it's index.cfm. So this is a Cold Fusion application that uses the Atlas client-side code. So the first thing I wanted to show is the autocomplete functionality that we saw before where it calls the web server. So this one's kind of cool. You just type a character, and it appends a random three other characters. So I didn't actually have a database available, so I just kind of appended some random characters. But you could imagine, of course, this is a web service written in Cold Fusion. I'll show you in a minute that it calls. So of course, with that web service written in Cold Fusion, you could call off to any database you wanted to. But you get that Atlas client-side functionality, and then you call get tasks. And notice as I call get tasks, it doesn't refresh the whole page. It only refreshes those divs that it needs to change that. So it's a fairly basic demo. What's interesting, let's take a look at the code. So I'll bring up the code here in Dreamweaver. So it, just to kind of prove the thing, this is kind of no strings behind my back here. This is a Cold Fusion app. And I have in here, in this Cold Fusion script, a reference to an Atlas include. So this is a function we wrote that sucks down the appropriate Atlas libraries for what we needed to do. And then down here, you'll see the actual JavaScript functions to get the items that are displayed, and then to bind the results that come back into that div. And then what we see here is this text WAC XML script. So this is the XML script, same XML script we saw in the earlier demo, exact same concept. And here is where we're doing all those bindings. So let's find the particular one. Yep. So this is the autocomplete. And you can see that in this case, it's the exact same kind of format we saw in the earlier one. In this case, I'm calling atlasservice.cfm and then calling the getWords method off that guy. So we switch over here to the atlasservice CFM. This is the kind of Cold Fusion web services infrastructure, and it's calling into this atlasservice, into this demo class guy. So we if we go over here to the demo class, then this is where you see a couple of the web services that we're calling. So the first one is this getWords method. And then in here, what we do, we simply kind of use some Cold Fusion code to loop through and append the characters on the end. This is where you would do the data access to actually pull that thing out. And then the other method that's in here, I actually cheated again here. And instead of going against the database and pulling those task items out, I just hard-coded those in. But of course, with Cold Fusion, you can go against any database you want and pull those items out of there. So that's the actual app logic that you would write. And you could see you get to write your server-side logic in Cold Fusion, and you leverage the Atlas client-side functionality. So in terms of what I had to do to get this to work, or what I in the broad sense, what some partners and I worked on together, is this kind of the major, one of the major pieces was this piece of functionality that Atlas likes to see things, the web service, to come down in JSON notation. So we had to turn the kind of Cold Fusion XML format into JSON before we send it down. So there is a JSON encoder and decoder that we wrote in Cold Fusion. And you can see it's basically just a bunch of regular expression kind of code. So, I mean, I won't go through it in detail, but you can kind of see basically how that works. It's a set of string processing, turning it from one format to another. There's a bunch of other stuff that you could do to really enhance the Cold Fusion support for Atlas. Somebody could build the equivalent of update panel for Cold Fusion. So there's kind of lots of room there. So I have the source code for both this demo and all the code needed, Cold Fusion code needed to run it, posted on my blog right now, so you can go check that out. I'll give you a URL in a minute. So we had a number of partners already take advantage of Atlas today, just to give you an idea. So squeet.com is this RSS reader. They've had a great, they converted over to it and have been very successful with that. TidalZ is thank you. Somebody pay attention. Yes. Okay, so squeet.com is an RSS reader, online RSS reader, and they leverage Atlas for some of the client-side functionality. And this is a quote from their president. They've been really happy with particularly with the productivity that they've been able to get out of Atlas. And then the TidalZ guys, they track the Amazon rankings of your book. So if you're a book author or you kind of want to check out a book, you can kind of see over time how the book's been doing. And they kind of claim the Atlas was magic for them, so that's good. And then the PageFlakes guys, if you played around with that, it's a very kind of innovative site. It's very neat. They're kind of pushing the envelope with what they can do with the rich client-side functionality in Atlas. So in addition to that, we have worked with a set of third-party control vendors. Obviously, a lot of them are already doing JavaScript stuff. So they were really happy when Microsoft decided we do a bunch of the plumbing code and ensure that would work. So they're converting their controls over. And in fact, these three already have a set of controls out today that work on Atlas, that work with that use Atlas on the client side. So we have a bunch more about Atlas and IIS and ASP.NET in general. So we're at the booth the kind of rest of the time. There's an Atlas in Depth session on Friday, and then if you're kind of interested in the changes in IIS7, they apply to ASP.NET as well as ColdFusion. There's a good time to check that out. And then a set of resources. So my blog is there at the bottom. That's where you can find the slides from today, as well as the sample. It's already up there. So we're in the middle of an Atlas Community Tech Preview right now. And the way that works is that every 6 to 8 weeks, we release a new Atlas drop. So there's the version that's out there right now has a go-live license to it, meaning you can go use that on your production web servers if you want to. And then the Atlas community site, there's a lot of great information up there for you to go download and use, lots of community support. And then I didn't get a chance to demo it, but the Atlas Control Toolkit, we have the goal is to get 50. I think we have about 20 controls to do the common things that every app needs to do with Atlas. So things like a drag and drop overlay so you can move this div from here to there. Lots of kind of UI glitz and UI elements are up there. And and the source code, what's great is the source code to all those is shipped, so you can see exactly how they were implemented. And you can go and even add your own controls to that toolkit library if you want to kind of help contribute to that community. So I'd appreciate it if you could fill out the evals, give some feedback on kind of what you liked and what you didn't, and look forward to hearing more from you. Thanks.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.